Last segment, we said look at the Bible to determine the best way to educate a child or to develop a discipleship program to properly prepare you for life in eternity. As it turns out, the Bible focuses on faith and character as preeminent in the education of a child. Now, not everybody agrees with that, and there isn't as much focus and as much commitment behind this idea of developing character amongst our educational institutions as it is with us, those of us who take the Bible seriously. Now, my experience in college didn't involve a lot of support in the area of character development. I didn't have decent relationships with most of my teachers. They didn't know who my name. They didn't know who I was. They had very little interest in my life. I had an advisor that was appointed to me in the secular college, and I visited with him the first week at college. I spent about 10 minutes with him, and I said, I'd like to meet with you on a monthly basis, if possible. Shouldn't I get back to you from time to time? And the man said, absolutely not. If I had things my way, I'd just as soon sit here and contemplate my navel. That was his response, not a real relational guy, if you know what I'm talking about. Well, as it turns out, if we are going to learn about character, we are going to need a number of things. Number one, we're going to need the book of Proverbs. Number two, we're going to need relationships with people who are willing to supply training and education in character. Now, we have to have students that are interested in what we're doing here. The students are not interested in receiving the information and walking alongside the mentors who care about the future of this mentee, then it's not going to work. But if we have somebody who's interested in learning character, wants to submit to the knowledge, the wisdom, the instruction, the correction that's involved in the mentorship, then we'll be successful. It's just that simple, you see. And if children or students or mentees are pushing back constantly and are not willing to be part of the program, not willing to be corrected, then they're playing the part of the scoffer. And that's why throughout the book of Proverbs, you have this constant reminder to the student that they need to submit to the knowledge and the instruction that is shared with them by the instructor who is supposed to love them. Now, one of the best pictures of education and discipleship and mentorship for Christians is the example of the Lord Jesus Christ himself. We need to remember that the Bible actually does present a really solid approach to education and discipleship, and certainly I don't think there ought to be any Christian who would in any way question the wisdom of Jesus Christ in his discipleship of his 12 disciples. He chose 12 disciples to be with him, and they were there with him for 3 years. This is very basic mentorship. The one thing we learn about mentorship is you have to establish long-term relationship. One of the differences between what you get in the world, like co-op ed programs where kids will come out of the college and work for 3 months in a corporation in a cooperative venture between the college and the corporation, is that the world has no concept what a decent mentorship looks like. It's not a three-month co-op ed program, which I actually was a part of when I was in college several times, but I didn't get to know any of my mentors or anybody in the corporate world who was even halfway interested in my future. They would sit me down at a desk, show me how to fill out a time card, say, hey, push this button, analyze this data, see you in 3 months, and that was the extent of the co-op ed experience. And friends, that is not a mentorship. One of the things you need to know about mentorship and the development of character is you absolutely need to focus on the mentor-mentee relationship. That's absolutely critical. Jesus made it a point to tell his disciples that he loved them, he gave his life for them, and he taught them. This is the picture of the ideal mentor. Now, it's not to say that any of us are going to be the ideal mentor. I've done mentorship for 7 years, haven't yet given up my life for any of my mentees or apprentices, but Jesus Christ is certainly a great example, and I want to challenge mentors to do mentorship. It's very, very difficult to find people willing to do mentorship because they're not willing to sacrifice their time, their resources, their lives for those that are trying to help. So Jesus is the example of this. relationships are central. They're very heart of what it is to establish a good, solid education or discipleship for a young person. And when there's a relationship that's solid, that is right there, we can focus on some of the biggest and most important lessons, and they tend to be the character lessons. That's why the father in the Proverbs, in Proverbs 23, cries out to his son, "My son, give me your heart. Come close. Observe my ways." That's what he's saying is, sit on the front seat of my life. Be right there with me. Observe me when I interact with my employees. Observe me when I interact with my friends and my relatives, my wife, my children. Observe me when you are walking by the way, when I'm making a business decision, when I'm working some conflict resolution with a client. Observe my ways. See how I do things. See how I interact. See how I make mistakes. See how I deal with my mistakes. See how I make up with people who I've offended. Watch me. Enter into my life, but give me your heart. The relationship between the mentor and the apprentice is very important. Why? Because the real focus of the mentorship is the character and developing and honing the character of the apprentice in that relationship. Now, when I was in seminary, I didn't have professors who developed that kind of relationship with me. In fact, they never dealt with my character. They weren't interested in dealing with character because they were teaching hermeneutics and homiletics and theology. They weren't focused on character. They had separated character and the fear of God and humility and these sorts of things away from the content of the material because that was their focus. But that's not the way God wants education presented. Certainly not in seminary, let alone in anything else in life. I never had a seminary professor say, "I'm looking at your paper here and I see you've got a pride issue." Now, as it turns out, a lot of young people have pride issues. In fact, in my mentorship of young men over the last 10 years or so, I think pride is the number one issue. It shows up all the time. They get a little knowledge and they're just sporting their knowledge everywhere. They're constantly acting way too proud. And the older I get, the prouder young men appear to me. It's just the way it works, especially as you get to know them. Maybe at the first meeting, you don't see that. But again, as you spend the time, if you go for 6 months, 8 months, or a year, you're going to begin to see the worst character traits show in these people. And friends, that's when the mentorship begins to kick in. That's the point at which the mentor can look the mentee in the eye and say, "I think you've got a pride issue. You really need to deal with this. Let me pray over you on this right now." And that, my friends, is the essence of what mentorship is all about. In fact, I never had a seminary professor ask me about my internet experiences, whether or not I was looking at the wrong internet sites. And any mentor, any teacher worth his salt needs to understand that the greatest enemies in a man's life, in a young man's life, typically appear on the internet today. And if there isn't a teacher, there isn't a Christian teacher, a Christian mentor, or certainly fathers and mothers really paying attention to these important areas, friends, they're not providing the discipleship and the mentorship necessary to launch our young men and our young women into life. It's so important. So, and the reason, of course, why there's very little focus on character is because there are so few relationships going on. Relationships are not important at all in college and public schools, for the most part. There may be small colleges here and there that focus on discipleship and relationships, but generally speaking, that's the furthest thing from their mind. Why? Because all of the classes are a matter of division of labor, and there are teachers who are focused on one particular class. You'll have that teacher for 3 months, and you'll never see them the rest of your life. You'll have another teacher you'll see for 3 months. You'll never see them for the rest of their life. And every hour you would go to a different class, and every year or every semester you get a new set of teachers, and relationships are of no use whatsoever in the Greek theory of education that's been imposed on most of the universities and schools around our countries today. Mentorship, relationships, focus on character, of almost no use whatsoever to prepare the next generation for life and for their economic contribution to the world. And friends, I'm here to tell you, for that reason, our systems are failing. For that reason, our economic systems will not survive. Here's an easy way to develop the concept of a healthy and a good economy. A healthy and a good economy is a function of the character of the nation. So if a nation is going downhill in terms of their economic strength, it is because the character, the cumulative character of everybody in this entire society is going downhill. Now, as it turns out, I believe that we can come out from among that and be separate. We can develop our own systems. We can develop our own character, our own mentorship, and over time, hopefully, develop a stronger educational mentorship approach and stronger microeconomies in the years to come. I think God's people certainly ought to be focused on faith and character, and if there's any discipleship going on, it ought to be going on in the churches, among Christian businessmen, with Christian mentees or apprentices, and of course with Christian parents who ought to be focusing on raising up children with strong faith in Jesus and strong character in order to become the strongest employees and economic contributors to our nation in the future. There's a little aphorism that goes like this: it's hard to soar like eagles when the people you work with are turkeys. Now, that's very, very true, and that's one reason why we want to sign up to the Eagle Academy versus the Turkey Academy. Because if you sign up to the Turkey Academy, where the educational approach negates the fear of God and humility and the character traits we read about in the book of Proverbs, you're going to turn out like a turkey. But if you go to the Eagle Academy, where you learn the wonderful lessons of the book of Proverbs, the lessons of faith and character, you'll be trained to, hopefully, by God's grace, soar like eagles and contribute greatly to your family's economy in the years to come. So my encouragement again to all of you is to make these things a priority. You say, well, how in the world can I contribute in the area of relationships? I know the relationship between me and the mentor, or me and my parents, or me and the people who are working with me is important. How do I contribute to that? My answer is simply, you need to love them. You need to respect them. You need to honor them. And it's really that easy. It's the basic principles of God's Word in relationship to other people. And there is so little honor going on between employees and employers, mentors and mentees, children and parents today, that if we learned the lesson of honor, which is really contained in the fifth commandment, I think we would be far more successful in the marketplace. Certainly, that's the promise of the fifth commandment. Honor your father and your mother, that it may go well with you in the land, that it will go well with you in the economy, that it'll go well with you in your future marriage, it'll go well with you in the development of your calling, it'll go well with you every single area of your life. And a real core issue there is your contribution to the relationship. When you're in relationship with a superior, whether it be a mentor or your own parent, the key thing for you is to love them, but to love them in an honoring way. And as you learn to honor and respect and listen to those counselors and mentors that God has put into your life, I believe you will be very, very successful. So contribute yourself to the relationship. And here's the other thing. If you're going for a mentorship, again, look for the long-term relationship, because you need to get to know each other before the mentor can really contribute to the core issues and the core needs you have, especially in your character. Somebody once said, nobody cares how much you know until they know how much you care. And that's what we're talking about here. Until there's a caring relationship, until there's a knowing relationship, until you know each other, it's hard to say that mentorship is really going to turn out that well. Now we're going to move on to the issue of life integration. Life integration is another aspect of education that's very important and ties in directly to the issue of mentorship. Life integration is all based on James 1 and the principle there that one who hears the word and does not do the word is like somebody who looks himself in the mirror and then quickly forgets what manner of man he was. That is, you know, somebody who sort of knows something and hears something, but doesn't life apply it, never does anything with it. It just kind of sits there in his brain, but he doesn't apply what he learned, is like somebody who looks himself in the mirror and quickly forgets what he looks like. And so most knowledge and most education tends to be that way. We tend to hear a lot of things. We tend to sit through lots and lots of lectures. We read a lot of books, but it really doesn't make any difference. We don't retain very much, and it's pretty much useless. And for that reason, I believe about 97% of education is a total waste of time. Unless there is a mentor or a teacher who understands that education is not stuffing facts in somebody's brain, but it is doing something with the facts that constitute the education process. Now, of course, we're not saying that knowledge isn't important. We're not saying that textbooks aren't important. We're saying, yes, that knowledge is important, but once you get the knowledge, you're only half done. The education process has not been completed. You haven't done your job yet. So most instructors, most universities don't do the job. They don't do the full job of education. They give you some facts, but they don't complete it. That is, they don't apply the facts to real life. A fact like 1/2 GT squared, which is the acceleration equation that you learn in physics, is not really all that important to very many people. You look at the textbook, you take the tests, you learn that's 1/2 GT squared is a distance that something falls, and that's pretty much it. Now you forget about that and you have no idea how it applies in life. However, if you're walking by a well and you're looking down and you see water down there and you're wondering how deep is that water, there is one good way to figure that out. Now, if you had never applied 1/2 GT squared, you might not know it, that it applies to that given situation. But somebody who is already fairly life integrated would know that the 1/2 GT squared equation for acceleration could very neatly be applied in that situation, that real life situation. And the reason I know this is because I dug a well one time on my property, and I'm looking down and I'm saying to my father, boy, I'd like to know what the static level of that water is. And my dad said, why don't you just use the 1/2 GT squared? Here we'll drop the rock and we'll count to, you know, how many seconds, 1 and 2 and 3 and 4 and right away we learned how deep that water was under the surface of the ground. And so again, my father is a very life application oriented person, but I had learned that in college, I learned it in high school, but I never really thought about the 1/2 GT squared equation as applying to that given situation. So somebody who has a life applied education not only learns things, but knows exactly how to use those things in real life. He gets the facts, but he also knows how to apply the facts in real life. And that's what our education systems need to do for us. Somebody once said, A students wind up teaching, and B students will work for C students. Which is interesting because President George W. Bush and John Kerry, who ran against him in the 2000 election, both went to Yale and were both C students. So it's very, very common that A students, that is those who do well in school, will wind up teaching because they did well in school. And the C students will eventually be the ones managing the B students because they tend to be practical people. They want to get out there. They want to do something. They want to apply what they have learned in the economy and do it as quickly as possible. This is also one of the reasons why the majority of billionaires never graduated from college. Because, you see, education is not really built to prepare men and women for the economy. It's prepared to give them a certain worldview, but it doesn't really show them how to apply the worldview and the things they learn in college in the real market. And I would also argue that it's typically a wrong worldview given in your average college today. So if you do very, very well in the school, then you'll probably be in the school for the rest of your life. The school has been separated from real life. It has nothing to do with family, church, business, politics. I mean, these are real things we do in life. And the school isn't part of politics. It's not part of church. It's not part of family. It's just the university. It's the college. It's out there on an island, and people with sterile masks and sterile uniforms are trying to press information into your brains with no real relevance to the outside world. I remember one time when my children were young, my wife shot up out of bed and said, this was about 11 o'clock at night, and she said, Emily hasn't done her grammar today. And she was very concerned about the fact that Emily hadn't done her grammar. And I asked my wife, well, maybe we should just get the children out of bed, and maybe Emily should do her grammar if it takes her till midnight to get her done. But before we did that, we began to talk about it some more and discovered the reason Emily hadn't done her grammar on that day was because Emily was writing a letter to Grandma. And she was about 9 years old at the time, and she had written a 2 or 3 page typewritten letter to Grandmother and detailing everything that was going on in our lives and all the rest. Well, I got to thinking, before we got Emily out of bed, why do we do grammar? Why study grammar? Has anybody ever asked that question? I mean, why do the things that we're doing? One of the problems is we don't even ask the question why we're doing what we're doing. Has anybody asked, why do I factor trinomials? Why do I study grammar? Why do I do any of this? And by the way, if students don't know why they're doing the study work, they shouldn't be doing it. They should know why they're doing it before they do it. As it turns out, the reason why we're teaching grammar is not so that when Emily is 29 years old, she'll get out of bed in the morning, she'll sit down and do more grammar because she has prepared all her life to do nothing but grammar. No, that's not the reason you study grammar. The reason you study grammar is so that you can write letters to Grandma. You see, the problem with education is that we're more about the theory than we're about the practice. Education is like teaching somebody how to ride a bike by taking bikeology for 12 stinking years. So here you are, studying bike assembly, bike statics, bike dynamics, bike accident recovery workshop, bike this, bike that for 12 years, and you never quite got on the bike. That, my friends, is a useless education. And that's the way most education is. You go into a building on an island, you sit there in a boring classroom for 12 years. You're bored out of your mind for 12 years. And you get theory and more theory for 12 years. And you've never actually applied anything you've learned. That is a waste of an education. But that is the way that education is done today. And that's why education is worth less and less and less. Because we're not respecting God's principle of life integration. See, a biblical epistemology, or theory of knowledge, is that you can't just know something. In fact, if you sit in an institution and you just pick up a bunch of head knowledge, after a while, your brain begins to puff and you become proud. You obtain a knowledge that puffs up, that makes you proud. So Paul talks about in 1 Corinthians chapter 8. And most education formed in secular systems are giving you a form of knowledge that puffs up, and not a form of knowledge that you can apply actually usefully in the marketplace. So this is the reason why we're teaching that mentorship is absolutely essential for anybody. It doesn't matter which track you're on. You could be on an entrepreneurial track. You could be working more in the college corporate track. It doesn't matter what track you're working on. The idea of mentorship is a powerful, revolutionary, reformational form of education that is going to do what it will take to reconstruct the entire economic system of America. I mean, I believe this. I believe that without some kind of a Copernican revolution in education, our economies will never, ever recover. The Japanese economy has been in decline for the last 25 years, and some are saying that American economy is on the same track now. Our unemployment rate is as high as ever, and it's been that way for the last 4 to 5 years, and it's probably not going to recover anytime too soon. Until we find ways to recover the idea of life integration in mentorship, that is, let's get out there, get into the field, start riding the bike. It doesn't matter how many accidents you have. Just get on the bike, start riding the bike, start applying the things that you learn out there in the marketplace, and you're going to be some of the most life-relevant, successful people that the world has ever known. If we can capture this concept, this Copernican revolution in education today, and my friends, Those of you I'm speaking to today, you are the guinea pigs. You're the first ones. You're the pioneers on this wonderful venture into mentorship. And I truly believe this is what it will take to salvage the American economy and the American family economy in the years to come. So let me encourage you, life integrate the education. Now, when I was graduating from my university at Cal Poly San Luis Obispo, it was one of the most hands-on universities in the state of California. It was the second best engineering school in the state. And I was supposed to have been ready for life and ready for work. But as I graduated after taking all those credits and being there for 5 years, I will tell you that I was not ready. I got into the workplace. I wasn't a good engineer from the beginning. I made a lot of mistakes. My first mistake, I remember I countersunk holes on the wrong side of a base plate by not dotting the lines on the CAD program. Now, some of you may not know what I'm talking about here, but I made a very basic mistake that nobody should ever make, but I made it, and I sent it off to the machine shop and wound up with these base plates with the holes countersunk on the wrong side and wasted $625. I was disappointed in myself, and I remember carrying one of those base plates in my wallet for the succeeding 4 or 5 years afterwards as a reminder of how important it is not to make that mistake. But then the next program I was a part of, it was a computer manufacturing business. The next part I was responsible for, I failed to launch the thing into the market and wasted $30,000 for the company. So I was, you know, I made $30,000 that year, wasted $30,625. I was completely useless for the marketplace for the first year that I was employed. And I realized that I had a lot of head knowledge. I had learned a lot from the best engineering school in the state of California, but I wasn't prepared to apply the things. I had learned the knowledge, I just didn't know how to plug the knowledge into anything. See, that was my problem. I had learned all about bike, I just had never ridden a bike. And I had learned computer-aided drafting 5 years earlier. I had learned statics 3 years earlier, dynamics 2 years earlier. I'd learned mechanical control theory a year and a half earlier. There were classes I hadn't even taken, including process design improvement classes, which eventually the company itself had to supply because there's such a disconnect between the corporations and the colleges that the colleges don't even use the useful classes that would actually be helpful for those who become the engineers in the marketplace. So we had all this disconnect going on. I had all these disparate pieces. I'd learned a little bit about economics. I learned a little bit about statics, about dynamics, and all these different things, but at different times, and I never really learned to integrate them into the whole and provide a useful product for the marketplace. You see, you've got to pull the disparate pieces and integrate them into the whole in order to become the good engineer that provides the good service or the good product for the marketplace, and that's something the college cannot give you, but the marketplace can, and mentors can apply that. And mentors can prepare you to be not just somebody with a whole head full of knowledge, but somebody who can effectively apply all of the pieces of knowledge you have learned in the marketplace to provide the good product for those who want to buy your product or your service. So that's the theory, and that's what mentorship should provide for you. Now, it's also a great opportunity for a determination of calling. Sometimes young people don't know exactly what they're going to do, but if they get into the water somewhere, step into the pool, they begin to get a feel for the pool. You know, let's say you want to be an engineer. You're not sure. Civil engineer, mechanical engineer, electronic, you don't know what you're going to be. So why don't you go work for a civil engineer for a while? And you're stepping into the pool, you get a feel for it. And you find out that's not exactly what I want to do, so you move over to computer engineering. And pretty soon you kind of center in on the kind of calling that God has for your life. But how would you know that unless you actually entered into the pool? Now, the problem is, of course, that most kids just go to college for 5, 6 straight years. And it's getting, by the way, more and more difficult to graduate from college. And some of these engineering programs takes a long time, takes a lot of money. So after all that time and money, you study civil engineering. But you find out, and by the way, this happens a lot, you find out you don't really want to be a civil engineer. You don't like it. It turns out you should have studied electronic engineering, but you didn't. So now you've got to go through a period of transition over 3 to 4 years to finally make it. After 9, 10, 12 years of preparation, you finally make it to the calling that God really has on your life and the best uses of your talents, gifts, and abilities. But if you had entered into mentorship early on, you would have certified your calling. And my friends, mentorship is a powerful way not just to life integrate, but also to certify calling in your life.